We should adjust our motivation such that we're going to listen to this profound teaching on the Great Vehicle with the attitude of the precious awakening heart. That is, that I must attain complete, peerless, perfect Buddhahood in order to establish all sentient beings equal to space in the happiness which knows no suffering. And for that end, we'll spend 2 minutes adjusting our motivation. So Shantideva says that in dependence upon both sentient beings and Buddhas, we will attain Buddhahood. Why is it we respect Buddhas and not sentient beings? So we are trying to practice the Great Vehicle. In our practice of Dharma, our aspiration is to achieve Buddhahood. And to this end, both the Buddhas and sentient beings are equal in the degree in which they facilitate our practice. Our practice is dependent partly upon the Buddhas and partly upon sentient beings. But we seem to be respecting sentient beings. We seem to be respecting Buddhas. Why, in a similar way, don't we respect sentient beings?
Sanjay
How is it that we depend upon the Buddhas? In dependence upon the teachings of the Buddha, we know what is to be adopted and what is to be rejected. We actually can carry out our practice. And therefore, it is the teachings of the Buddha which said about how to practice. That is the means by which we will attain Buddhahood. This is the benefit of which the Buddhas bring us. In dependence upon the sentient beings, they likewise facilitate our practice. This is how they benefit us. In dependence upon them, we are able to carry out our practice through such means as the development of love, compassion, the awakening heart, the various six perfections such as generosity, ethics, and patience, that we carry out the four means of collecting the cultivating the minds of disciples, that all these are means of creating positive potential, of actually fulfilling, bringing one's practice to culmination. Therefore, the Buddhas facilitate our practice, sentient beings facilitate our practice. Without Buddhas, there would be no practice. Without sentient beings, there would be no practice. Therefore, it is through their great kindness of both the Buddhas and the sentient beings that we will ultimately attain our aspiration of Buddhahood. This is due to both their great kindnesses. That the very fact that we attained a human life is dependent upon sentient beings. That previously, through our practice of ethics, that we created the karma whereby we were born as a human being. And that fact that we have a beautiful body, a pleasant appearance, is due to practicing patience with respect to sentient beings. Also the fact that we have a material prosperity is due to having sentient beings in order to practice generosity. the type of future existence that we will be able to attain. The fact that we will is dependent upon sentient beings. The fact that we will attain liberation is dependent upon sentient beings. The fact that we can become a bodhisattva is dependent upon sentient beings. That we will ultimately achieve Buddhahood is dependent upon sentient beings. We are constantly dependent upon sentient beings until the very achievement of Buddhahood. And that in order to carry out the practice, that we must achieve a human life again and again. And even this, in order to practice, to achieve all these various ends, we must depend upon sentient beings. So it is said that the tradition for generating the awakened heart, as explained by Shantideva, is superior to that of the seven cause and effect precepts. The means of attaining within the tradition of the seven cause and effect precept, we are seeking to attain pleasant love with respect to all sentient beings. And this, we see the kindness of sentient beings in terms of recognizing all sentient beings as our mother. And by this recognition, we begin to become aware of the kindness of sentient beings when they were our mother, and we, in dependence upon that, we develop pleasant love. But the type of pleasant love that we attain through the method as explained in the exchange of self for others is said to be surpassing in this respect, since we see that sentient beings are kind all the time, not only when they're mothers, and all the various whatever that we achieve, whether it's high status, definite goodness, or Buddhahood, is dependent upon sentient beings. Therefore, the pleasant love which is generated in the exchange of self for others is said to be surpassing. It exceeds that of the pleasant love within the tradition of the seven cause and effect precept.
Yes.
it said that the determining quality of the superiority of these two traditions is in terms of the pleasant love that we are able to generate in dependence upon the various causes. And within the seven cause and effect precept tradition, we use the basis of recognizing all sentient beings as our mothers, remembering their kindness of their mothers. So we're remembering the kindness of sentient beings in a small area, with a specific reference when they're our mother. And it said that this type of reference, this type of focus, is like the amount of is small like the palm of our hand. We're focusing our attention on that type of kindness of sentient beings when they're our mothers, and this is compared to the area of our hand. Whereas within the tradition of Shantideva, we're seeing that the kindness of all sentient beings at all times to achieve all ends, that both our temporal and ultimate ends, our ends of high status, definite goodness, and liberation and Buddhahood, that they're kind to us all the time, in all these various ways. Everything that we achieve is dependent upon sentient beings. So this, the area upon which we're focusing in determining the kindness of sentient beings is like vast, like space. It's much, much greater. Therefore, if our cause is great, then our effect is going to be great. We can understand it quite easily. Depending upon the power of the cause, to that same degree, we're going to have that much power within the effect. This is why, because of the great power and seeing the kindness of sentient beings in all these vast areas that we relate with them to, then the effect, the pleasant love that we're going to be able to generate from these causes of remembering their kindness, is going to be, what need to say, how much, much greater it's going to be than the previous type in the other tradition. We can understand readily that from small causes we arise small results, from great causes, great results. So it is here in the vastness of seeing the kindness of others that we're going to develop a great, pleasant love. This degree of the power of the cause is going to determine the greatness of the effect. So the distinguishing factor which is going to bring about the surpassing quality of the awakening heart within the exchange of self and others is the way we remember the kindness of others, producing a much more powerful type of pleasant love. As a preliminary to the development of pleasant love, we, as was explained last week, we develop equanimity. And we did this in a nine-round meditation. Looking upon sentient beings, first from their own side, that all sentient beings want to be happy, that none want to suffer, seeing equality with respect to this. Then from our side, seeing that there is no difference in the benefit which sentient beings are constantly giving to us. And then from the ultimate point of view, that sentient beings, that enemies are merely imputed by names, that the Buddha does not see anyone as an enemy. In fact, he sees all sentient beings as dear ones. What did I use last week? Dear ones? As close or dear ones. That is to say, we develop a type of equanimity in which the Buddha has equal love and compassion toward all sentient beings. That he does, the type of equanimity that we're developing is a type of which is not only does it not hold some beings close and others distant, but in fact holds all sentient beings equally as dear, and therefore seeks to benefit and bring happiness to all sentient beings equally. And this is the special equanimity of this tradition. So within the tradition of the seven cause and effect precept, the equanimity, which is the preliminary, is a equanimity which is an equanimity not holding some distant and others near, in the manner of not developing attachment or and hatred toward others. This type of equanimity is common to the hearer vehicle, that is to say the lesser vehicle. But within this tradition, the type of equanimity is, again, does not hold some near and others distant, but in a manner of holding all sentient beings as dear, and therefore seeking equally to benefit all sentient beings. And this is unique to the Bodhisattva. The essence of the equanimity is mainly the fact that all sentient beings want to be happy, they don't want to suffer. That just like ourselves, that we don't want the slightest suffering, and we want any type of happiness that we can get. We, in that same exact way, all other sentient beings are just like ourselves. Both self and others are equal in this respect, that none want the slightest of suffering. We all want however much happiness that we can get. We're all equal in this respect.
You don't.
We're talking about self and others. And self, you know, is referring to I, me, myself. Others are every other being but myself, all others. The fact is that both self and others desire happiness and seek to and do not want to suffer. We're completely equal in this respect. But because in fact, the way we operate is that we hold ourselves dear, that we cherish ourselves, that we seek, we make effort, we are constantly making effort, trying to find happiness for ourselves, trying to eliminate our suffering, because we hold ourselves dear. On the other hand, when we look at others, we hold them at a distance. We do not, in fact, hold them dear at all. We push them away. We have no cherishing toward them. We do, even though they want to be happy and they don't want to suffer just like ourselves, we make no effort to bring about their happiness. We don't try to bring their happiness, try to eliminate their suffering. Therefore, there's this great difference in the way we relate to ourselves and to others. So we hold ourselves very dear. We cherish ourselves. And others we have no cherishing for. We don't hold them close. And this is the great difference between the way we relate with ourselves and the way we relate with others. But is, in fact, you know, is this an appropriate way to act in view of our situations? You know, in view of the fact that that all sentient beings are exactly the same in wanting to be happy and not wanting to suffer, then this seems to be a very inappropriate way to relate, this great difference in the way we relate between ourselves and others. The way that we hold some beings close and others distant, when in fact they're exactly the same. Now, the practice of a bodhisattva is that he holds none differently in the degree of closeness and distance with it. That he sees that if we were to present a syllogism in why we should establish the fact of treating all sentient beings equally, we say that we could say, for example, that it is inappropriate to hold some beings close and others distant because they all want to be happy, none want to suffer. And therefore, this is the reason that we give to establish and why we should begin to modify the present way we're relating in holding some close and others distant. Simply is completely inappropriate way to relate from the pure fact of wanting happiness and not wanting to suffer. They're equal. So this is the reasoning that Dharmakirti sets forth. This is, you know, using the logic. It is a correct reason. Take as a subject oneself and others. The predicate, it is inappropriate to hold some one close and the other distant. And the reason establishing this syllogism, this thesis, because they are both want to be happy and don't want to suffer equally. So is that So, you know, this way of reasoning, this syllogism that was presented, you know, the self takes self and others as a subject. It is inappropriate to hold self close and others distant by the reason of that all, but both self and others are equal in wanting happiness and not wanting to suffer. Does that way of reasoning, does it make any sense to you? How does you think about that? Is that a good reason? So, you know, if this type of reasoning, you know, sounds good to us, then, you know, if we, by using this type of reasoning, understanding that all sentient beings are equal, but both and self are equal in wanting to be happy and not wanting to suffer, then it would appear that using this way of reasoning that we should treat sentient beings in the exact same way that we treat ourselves, since we're exactly equal in wanting happiness and not wanting to suffer. If we promote our own welfare in liking ourselves, then equally we should do that for others. If we hate ourselves, then likewise we should do that toward others, since we are exactly equal. So this is the rationale as presented in Buddhism, from the point of view that we are to treat both self and others exactly the same, since in fact there's no difference in we are exactly the same, using this reasoning that since we both want happiness and don't want to suffer equally, we're exactly the same in this, then we should treat both self and others equally, since we're the same in this.
Dollar
So, you know, if we extend this reasoning that we're making use of, that since we are exactly the same in self and others in wanting to be happy and not wanting to suffer, therefore that we should, since we are exactly the same in this respect, then we should treat both self and others with in equal way. But presently we don't do that. We hold ourselves close and others distant. But in fact, we should be relating to both self and others in an equal fashion. Now, how do we relate with ourselves? We relate to ourselves by cherishing ourselves. So likewise, we should relate to others in the same exact way and cherish others. So if someone were to ask you, since we're supposed to, it seems that it is appropriate to relate to sentient beings, others, in the same way that we relate ourselves, since we're both exactly the same, then what should we do? Should we relate with others as we do with ourselves presently? That is to say, should we cherish others just as we cherish ourselves? Or should we, just as we do not cherish others, should we not cherish ourselves? So we have two alternative possibilities. What would you do? Shen Chi Jing. So it seems that we should cherish others, and we should also cherish ourselves. So then we should cherish both self and others. This is not sufficient. But in fact, we should begin to cultivate a cherishing others and begin to adopt a means of ridding ourselves of self-cherishing. We are to cultivate other cherishing and to rid ourselves of self-cherishing. So previously we've cherished ourselves and not cherished others. But now we are going to try to reverse that. We are going to exchange the cherishing. We're going to now try to cherish others and not cherish ourselves. You know, it would apparently seem that, well, we should cherish both oneself and others equally, but in fact this is not skillful. that if we look at the what becomes of these attitudes, then we can begin to understand that this holding and this attitude, this way of relating, is unskillful from the point of view that in cherishing oneself, we're going to see that there are many great faults will arise. But on the other hand, by cherishing others, we're going to see how this brings about all the excellent qualities. So it's from this point of view that we see that that the cherishing of self and cherishing of others are not similar. They're not alike in what is going to come of these. But in fact, it's much more skillful to begin to cherish others and diminish our self-cherishing. So now a line from the actual root text of thought transformation is set forth, in which it says, drive all blame onto one, or place all blame onto one. So what is being referred to is that from beginningless time up to now, that all are the various sufferings which we experience, that we undergo, all our various miseries, is brought about by this one great fault of self-cherishing. And if we don't change this attitude presently, then we are going to remain in the same situation and we will be constantly experiencing the same in the future. If we simply abide in this with our self-cherishing, if we remain in this state with this attitude, then we will continue to experience all the suffering that we previously experienced up to now, and that our present situation of continually circling through all the migrations of cyclic existence, in the six migrations of the hell beings, the hungry ghosts, the animals, humans, anti-gods and gods, continually circling through these dissatisfactory states, that is all dependent upon maintaining this self-cherishing attitude. Not only that, but if we don't begin to exchange the self-cherishing attitude, we are never going to attain liberation, the bliss of liberation, and nor what to say of Buddhahood.
Change what you are, Nice.